Oh,
I have the perfect opener for this episode.
Okay.
Let's just get this over with.
Welcome to Know Your Rights, a music podcast from two guys who know just enough about songwriting to start a podcast about.
Follow Rob
and Colton
as each week we dive into a different band or songwriter and discuss what makes them great,
okay, or otherwise.
Music is law,
and we know our rights. Welcome.
Welcome.
Welcome. Everybody. Welcome, yes. To Know Your Rights. I guess the best way to start this is, when did I text you? I know when. It was Thursday morning, and I was in San Francisco, actually, with my wife, Casey. We were at a Blue Bottle. I'm setting the scene because it's very vivid in my mind. And we had to wake up early in the morning to drive to San Francisco because we were going to the chiropractor. And that's where the chiropractor is. This really great guy.
You go to a chiropractor?
Since like 3 weeks ago.
How are you liking it?
I love it. It's funny because I've never been. I probably have needed to go my whole life. And not for like chronic pain necessarily, but posture and just like this. Like I'm like always doing this. I'm shaking my right shoulder, everybody.
Yeah, for the right. And it's funny you say that because I'm reminding myself, because as we're talking, I'm hunched over.
That's
and
right.
I've been trying to focus on my posture a lot more, like putting a water bottle behind my back when driving, just to kind of keep my shoulders back and keep it.
That's a good idea.
Yeah.
And driving is the worst for me. Driving is where it's my right shoulder, which I now know from the chiropractor is because that's the one with the most kind of, it's not even that it's damaged necessarily. I've never had any major injuries, knock on wood.
Never say never.
It's like bad habits that have like basically it's healed to be kind of screwy. And so I'm always trying to change it.
That's why I'm really trying to focus on it. Like when you're driving, where are your hands? Or where is one hand per se?
Left hand up on, what is that? 1 or 12.
12? Okay, yeah. I'm always at 12 with one of the hands. Mm-hmm. And that's just...
not good.
And so now I've basically been going around with the water bottle behind my back. And I got my hands at, what would that be? 5 and 7.
These are the conversations that you and I would have never had in our teens or 20s. These are 30-year-old, like back half of 30 conversations.
That's right, man. We're closer to our 40s than we are to our 20s.
That has to be our audience, basically. I don't think if you're in your 20s and you're listening to us, welcome. But also, go to a chiropractor early if you're in your 20s. It's fun.
How much have you listened to Brand New?
So now I totally forgot why I was even talking to a chiropractor. I was in San Francisco. I was at Blue Bottle. It was early in the morning. And I texted you because I had a dream that featured you the night before. And it was clear in my brain. And I needed, it's like one of those things where I have dreams about like old friends and I'll just text them. And it's kind of creepy, I guess, when I do it. But I'm like, I need to tell them so they know.
I'm intrigued to see how this translates because I've always felt, I think I said this in a previous episode, a dream may be crazy to you, right? Like, oh man, that was nuts. And then you tell somebody about it and they're like, okay.
Yeah, that's fine.
That sounds like a dream. So I'm wondering how
it wasn't necessarily like weird and surreal. It was actually weirdly kind of mundane. I was kind of watching you like in the room with you, but also I was watching a film starring you. And it's very like Dante from Clerks, if anyone's familiar, where you are like the cashier at a like some kind of like gas station, but it's also like following you in your life. And all I could remember thinking, it was like you with like all these different scenes that I can't recall exactly, but I remember thinking, man, Rob is like an amazing actor. Like he's so good.
That's actually the reality of me. I'm just acting throughout the day. And then at night I turn into the real me.
But I know this from experience with you because when we did our one music video, which if you're curious, anyone, my friend Sam, Seattle,
please actually check it out. Yeah.
On YouTube. I think it's pretty damn good.
I think the concept of the video is good. I think out of you, Tom, and I did the worst acting.
Oh, that's not even what I was about to say. I was about to say I thought you were the best actor. And I know who was the worst, and he's sitting right here.
Oh, come on, man. Yours was more please everybody check this out. I really want to pause
Pause right now
and go watch the video.
We'll be right back.
All right, welcome back.
Featuring a lot of people that we don't talk to anymore.
No, that's for damn sure. That's for damn sure.
Talk about being canceled.
Fuck. Yes. But regardless, your little scene, I thought it was when you turn around and you go, what the fuck? You know, you mouth that out. I thought it was comedically timed very well.
I think the difference is the problem is that I'm playing on like a Buster Keaton kind of level, and you're playing on like a young Robert De Niro. Like your face is really intense. You're very good.
But I still hate the fact that I walk up and it's like clearly I can see the guy, but I do that like walk up to my spot that I'm supposed to stop at, and then I notice the bunny rabbit playing my guitar. You can see as I'm walking up, he's in my field of vision, but for some reason I stop at this one point and go, oh, there's a bunny. I know. I self-deprecate. I'm not a big fan
it's
of myself.
It's movie magic.
So, there you go. All right, cool.
Directed by Kyle Saylor, by the way, my cousin.
Yes, he did a great job. He did a great job. But I mean, I was proud of when I spun the helmet around.
And the world's smelliest bunny rabbit costume. God. So
yeah,
there you go.
I can't even. We all took our turn playing the bunny rabbit, right?
Yeah, I think everyone did. I think like four different people were the bunny rabbit. Different.
Yeah,
places.
I think I chased the ice cream truck.
That's
which,
right.
God bless that lady for letting us. It's like, you don't have to do anything. Just drive away, and we're just going to do a one shot take. And
she
you just
was
drive
maybe the
away.
Best actor in the movie. Now I think about it.
I agree. In the movie,
yeah, that's what I'm saying. I know Walter was in there for at least one shot with Tom, and then I was
poor
I
think, Walter.
Yeah. I was dressed up in the parking lot of the mall, the Antelope Valley Mall.
Yes, I wasn't there for that shoot.
No,
isn't that interesting? We had a shoot.
Yeah, it was like it was multiple days. It was like 4 or 5 days.
That was interesting. That was a fun little adventure. Well, everybody, go check out that. You know what, Colton? You brought this up that I did not give you any song to listen to. You know what have we been listening to this week? It's because I've been terrified of this episode. That's the main reason. Everybody, we'll get into it. But
yeah.
So my choice is Seattle is Dead. Everybody, go check out Seattle is Dead this week. Thank
was that
Colton.
On purpose, or is that like no. Just kind of falling?
Yeah, helped me out, Colton. I appreciate
literally,
you.
I was just thinking Seattle is Dead. Without it thinking of the video, I was thinking that song over the week because I've been doing more like air drumming. I'm doing a little bit of writing, so I've been doing a lot more air drumming in my head because I don't have a drum set to actually write things on. And
yeah.
I was remembering my drum beat for that song. And
it's a really good drum beat.
How much I loved it. I loved playing that song. That song is so fun.
Yeah, that was a cool tune to play. And as I said before, it was based on some of the stuff I stole from Blink-182.
Which was eye-opening.
Yes. I wasn't willing to tell you that at the time.
That's fair.
Yeah.
You know my drum influences. None of them are good. So there we go. Okay.
John Otto.
Should I just tell you my pick? I guess you already know it.
I do, and that's a cool song.
The Rubber Bandits. I don't know. Have you ever heard of the Rubber Bandits?
Never heard of them. Even though the name, the Rubber Bandits, I'm like, that's from a movie or something.
They are. I'm trying to like think of how to compare them because they're from Ireland.
They're the Ireland cake.
Calling
from what
them,
I heard.
I don't know that's what's weird about it is. I think they are probably more akin to like the Lonely Island in terms of they like are comedic rap duo. One guy is MC, one guy is the guy who does the beats, I believe. And their whole thing is that they're like kind of like plastic bags that kind of cover their face, where it's like a baklava, or balaclava. Sorry, baklava.
Yeah.
Like ski mask. And they're very funny. Super, super funny. It's very like Irish themed humor. Like the one song that's great is I Have a Horse Outside. The other one's Up the Raw. It's all about like IRA enthusiasts, like very politically funny enough. Like a lot of those songs have like political satire things to them that I think goes over the heads of like me, especially. I don't know a lot about Irish politics, but
I mean, I know that the IRA is a thing.
They are. But
not too fond of England.
That's our amazing Irish commentary. And they have a few others, but.
Well, Sonny really didn't strike me as a funny song.
And that's the thing is that song, from what I understand, I think they put out other singles since then. It's mainly they just do singles. I don't think they have a record. And they do like pretty funny music videos. Sonny was one I found later I think it was back in, I want to say 2017. Funny enough. Okay. A date we're going to talk about later as
Yes, for sure. Or a year. Yeah.
And it's all about this idea, or not idea, this reality that in Ireland, there's like a suicide epidemic, and it's primarily among men in Ireland. And at the time that the video came out, I know numbers were especially high. Today, I don't actually know if they're better.
Should I have watched the music video?
Probably. The music video is very powerful.
I didn't watch the video. I just kind of
necessary.
Like,
I don't think. But
the only way I could find it was on YouTube, so I really should have watched the video. But I just set my phone down and just kind of let the song play and wandered around. I listened to it three times.
I think the video is great, but I think the song does enough on its own.
Yeah, the song's cool. That's where I got the kind of Irish cake sound in my head.
Definitely, it's one of those things where it's like if I sing Frightened Rabbits, I've mentioned this on the pod before, but I will just start talking in an Irish accent, which for me is not great. It's not a great Irish accent.
He for me, it's...
Lordly, you're addicted to drugs.
Hey, you said drugs pretty good
he
there.
He doesn't owe his mother's money to dogs. It's so good. But there,
no, it's cool.
There are parts of that song, I have to say, where I'm really just struck by he's a pretty great writer.
I think so too. And he also has like a conviction behind when he's singing the line. It doesn't sound put on or anything. Like when he says that one line, he's got a fucking problem, not a fucking disease. You know, yeah, and I was like, ooh, that's solid.
The delivery is great. Yeah. I love he doesn't drink to remember, he doesn't drink to forget, he doesn't drink to remember the smell of drink on her breath. And then a little bit after that where it's she's not addicted to drink, she's not addicted to drink, she's not addicted to sinking pints till her skin starts to stink. Like that is people talk about like the opening of Lose Yourself, right, with Eminem. And like how great all those, like he's kind of
the imagery,
like in the sound of it and the alliteration, like syllable to syllable. That is a great example in the Rubber Bandits too. He really does. I don't know if it's bars necessarily, but I think he's got away with language.
You can call it bars because it still sounds hip hop. I mean, the music has got like definitely that like trap kind of vibe to me. Maybe not trap. I'm really bad when it comes to electronic music classification. Like, but some along the lines of techno, trap, like in that the music kind of has that that feel.
And it's very like it's an exercise, I think, in radical empathy, which I can appreciate. Like I think like towards the end of the song, he says he's not in love with the 7-year-old from 12 houses down or something. Yeah. And it's like going through all these different scenarios of someone who would think that suicide is the best way out of that, whatever that path is. And I think that takes a certain kind of person to just, and like, I'm saying that in a good way, everyone, where it's no matter what your thoughts are, it's a kind of empathy you kind of have to admire.
Yeah, yeah. Sonny doesn't sound like a flattering character, but he still is saying, don't kill yourself, Sonny. Put the rope down.
Put down the rope. That's my last time.
That was not.
You're hard. Important to sub with Sonny, so put down.
Put down the rope.
Oh, and who's joined the podcast? It's Lucky, our Irish friend.
That's right.
How you doing?
How you doing? We're going to...
We didn't think this episode would be where we introduce characters, but this is the one.
Get ready to Lucky's going to pop up a few more times.
Oh, you fucking yanks. Why are you two talking about this afternoon? Who's this band?
Well, Lucky, I'm not going to dive into the band just yet. So, Lucky, you go to the wayside. We'll talk to you a little later.
Lucky has gone off to the side. He's gone off to the side.
Lucky went out for a smoke really quick. He's got
to come back.
Yeah, he went to the pub. He might be back by the end of the episode.
We've lost our Irish actor audience.
But I do want to do just a really, really brief sports talk.
Go ahead.
Really brief.
Hit me with it.
Because this will be a good transition into the artist we're going to talk about.
I don't know if I believe you, but go ahead.
I am going to make a prediction. This will probably be my most accurate sports prediction. I'm a month ahead, everybody. So Julio Urias is not going to be a Dodger ever.
Yeah.
Not play in the MLB ever again.
I totally take back what I said, because I literally was going to bring this up to you again as a way of leading into our discussion. The past, 2 weeks or so, I think you've had at least three stories break across mediums where there's Justin Sane from Black Flag, who with 12 different
which
women.
That shit is, holy crap, man.
That is wild. And I don't know, like, and I'm not a Black Flag or what am I talking about? Black, it's Anti-Flag.
Anti-Flag, yes. I love and a mine. That
punks everywhere are mad at me. Go ahead.
Great. I love Mind the Gat and I love Die for Your Government. So I'll still listen to those two songs, but yeah, fuck the dude. I mean,
yeah. And Julio Urias, you're just talking about where
second time in
videotaped,
public.
Videotaped.
Yeah.
At this point now.
To clarify to everybody, it's a domestic violence in public. And it's the second time it's happened with him. And it was at the Messi game.
That's right. The Messi LA playing, soccer club game.
Yeah, playing against LAFC. What the fuck is wrong with you, man?
If we're talking in like professional sports, like I literally was just downstairs watching a game featuring Deshaun Watson. How many women have come up against Deshaun Watson? And he's playing quarterback for the Cleveland Browns and had a good game. And everyone's like, oh, Watson is back. Is he going to reach his? And I'm like,
yeah,
well,
he's a great quarterback.
Didn't destroy his kneecap. Like he was suspended for a reason.
Yeah. He wasn't out due to injury. Yes. He was out due to, but to other people. Yeah. But there's tons of football players who have, what was the dude? He played for the Chiefs. Abused his son, broke his son's leg. Tyreek Hill.
Yep.
And because it wasn't caught on video, it just doesn't seem to impact as much to everybody.
We could keep going. There's Rice, the running back for the Ravens. That's that famous infamous video, right, of him in the elevator with his wife. I think what we're already kind of, if you're listening or kind of catching the drift of this episode, of course we're talking about Brand New, and I think part of this is if you think about this stuff a lot, which arguably maybe we should, but also if you're trying to just keep your mind like healthy, it will upset you a lot, right?
And it
touches everything.
It really does, man. I did so much reading this last 2 weeks, and like I said, just reliving all of this information sweeping over me, and it's still just as disturbing. It's still just as disturbing.
Let's do this because I think
we've
talked about this a lot, Rob, and I thought it would be, I think, important to kind of open with this. You and I are going to have what I'm actually, I guess excited is the wrong word, but I'm looking forward to this conversation with you because I think it's versions of one that we've had in the past. And I do think it's like a really important one to have, like, and I'm glad that we're getting to have it. I know though, and I think this is something you always kind of have when you have these kinds of like commentary like discussions. You and I are going to be talking a lot about our personal ways into this discussion, right? And what happened with Brand New, with Jesse Lacey. And there's the discussion of like how this affects fans, people who like music, right? And that's there, and that's something we'll have. And then there's what happened to like the women that
the
are
victims.
Involved in this. The families of them, like all these people that have been, you know, touched in arguably a lot of really awful ways because of what happened that we're likely not going to discuss as much. And that's not saying that's not the thing that usually or should be the thing at the front. But I think this is really just you and I trying to make sense of it. What now it's like 5 years later.
Yeah. 2017, like you said.
So just know that for a listener, right? Yeah. A little bit of a trigger warning, but this is also something that I think probably has happened amongst friends and people across the globe, right? The country, at least. And I'm glad that you guys can have this here. I don't think I would want to have it with anyone other than you, buddy.
Well, ditto, except like I told you, no, I won't disclose any names. I did talk to a few of our fellow artists and no names, but we had some conversations too to help me because I'm the one who made this happen. We're doing Brand New.
To your credit, though, this is something you and I, when we knew we wanted to do this podcast, I know this is something we've circled around because, spoiler alert, like for a period of time, I don't think there was a band that loomed quite as large for either of us in various ways when it came to influence. And
if
for a
we're,
lot of
we're,
our
yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah, we're not doing our categories, by the way, everybody.
Right.
Yeah, we're not even doing the categories. We're just going to discuss them.
Yeah, but we talked about that in terms of what would be the best way forward. We're comfortable with categories, but yeah, I think we also know enough about the band itself where I know we can have this discussion without, the music will come up. It's a part of it, right?
Yeah,
we have
absolutely.
To.
Absolutely.
This is difficult. So let's do this. I'm looking at my notes. My notes are Erykah Badu. So I'm like, oh, best song, The Healer.
The Healer. Hell yeah, man. That's a great song.
So I guess I'll go ahead and just kind of lay it out. I know that we have a lot of things we want to talk about. And the first thing I know we should probably establish, we have an order here. And it's really just talking about our histories with the band and where our kind of initial like admiration slash whatever word you want to put in there, love, respect, whatever it is, for Brand New.
Well,
where
I say
did
we,
that start for you?
I would imagine like their first album never really reached me at that time.
And I was going to say the same. I actually, before we recorded, I was doing a quick, like, because I didn't expect us to talk about your favorite Weapon. And I actually did a quick refresher course of it. And I went, great, still terrible. Moving on.
There's a couple of really good songs to me on that album. But it the idea behind the album is what's not good to me. And they would even say the same thing. The other members have been quoted as saying, we're kind of ashamed of that album. It was really just a... like trying to become famous and, you know, and obviously a lot of, you know, being very upset with your exes.
It's very of that time. And they're from, I know from Long Island, right?
Long Island. Yeah.
And so you have like Glassjaw, you have Movie Life, and both those bands as well. Glassjaw, right? Has some really, on their first album, especially some very like violent minded. Darren Palumbo has come out and said the same thing. He's kind of embarrassed that those songs are out, but that was the early 2000s emo ethos.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. All of it is you're just going to berate your ex. It really was a lot of that. What's the one song that I keep that Brand New has where it's like, I hope you choke and die. Like every time that part came on, because I listened, that I had to listen to that album as well.
That's kind of 70 times myself. Seven.
Which I think is melodically a good song. Melodically, but every time it hits that I hope you choke and die, I'm like, that's a whole bunch of dudes shouting it back with you.
I think that the other one on that record that, I mean, I know I've covered before with a bunch of people is Jude Law and A Semester Abroad, and it's the same idea where there are bands of that period and records of that period that I actually still feel kind of close to, right? And I think of the band that Brand New's usually discussed with, at least in their early career, which is Taking Back Sunday. Yep. I love Tell All Your Friends. Like, I've talked about it. We've covered them before.
Yeah, yeah. And
Tell Your Friends has, like, some of the more, for me, iconic, like, 2000s emo lines where you could slit my throat and with my one last gasping breath, I'd apologize for bleeding on your shirt.
Yeah, yeah.
That is so embarrassing and cringy, but it's also so perfect. I think Brand New to me when I listen to that record, which I agree with you. I probably listened to Jude Law and A Semester Abroad once, and then Dejantendu came out, and I was like, why would I ever listen to that record again?
And that's interesting. You said, I just wanted to say Failure by Design and the No Seatbelt song. Those are good songs. Still creepy, but good songs.
Yeah.
But yeah, Dejantendu. So I remember it was late one night, and I'm watching MTV, you know, and all of a sudden the music video for The Quiet Things That No One Ever Knows comes on, and it was just such an interesting video to me, and the song was cool. The riff now is to me very, very mundane, not that interesting, but listening, this is incredible, man. Yeah. And it was a really cool music video, which I rarely talk about music videos, but I like the fact that it's like he has to make sure that his girlfriend who was in the car accident with him, he has to go see her before he can go and transcend into the afterlife, you know. And but that was the first thing that introduced me to it, so I went and bought the album, and I only liked three songs off the album. When I the first time I was just like, god, the rest of this is trash, it's garbage. I liked The Quiet Things and No One Ever Knows. I liked Sick Transit Gloria, Glory Fades. Uh-huh. And okay, I Believe You, But My Tommy Gun Don't, which was the only one that I recognized the movie reference at that point in time.
Like, what is the movie reference for that? Oh, is that
it's
from
Home Alone?
Alone.
Yeah.
I didn't know that. Oh.
Yeah. Okay, I Believe You, But My Tommy Gun Don't. Yeah. But
that's hilarious. Can I, quick aside, do you know that was not a real movie that they're like that those clips come from? I never knew that. That actually just filmed for Home Alone. I always figured it was like an old movie.
Oh, yeah. The movie that Kevin's watching. All right, I'm sorry. I had to catch up.
That blew my mind when I learned about it. I was like, what?
Yeah, no, that was just made for the movie. I was the same way as a kid, though, too. I was like, what's this old-timey film?
And that's interesting because I don't think I remember our, like, first real connection over Brand New. I can't remember what song it was. It all kind of gets blurry to me, but
I think I may have an idea, but I'll let you talk about your Deja Entity.
I think, again, I go back to that Road Rules compilation.
I knew this was coming back. I knew it was coming back. Yeah,
like that should be in a museum somewhere. And it was Jude Law and A Semester Abroad was on that mix. You know, that song it's embarrassing, and it's also the same thing where I can't truly listen to it now and take a lot of pleasure out of it, but at the same time, of that genre, it's very capable. It's hitting all the notes you would want to hit, right? Or a breakup song where you wish awful things about the person who broke up with you.
Yes, yes.
But
that chorus is fairly undeniable.
Right? I would say so.
100%. Tell all the English boys you meet, like an American boy back in the States. You know.
So when Deja Entendu came out, it was Quiet Things It Never Knows. I think it was on Fuse probably that I saw the video.
Yeah, I probably was on Fuse for me too.
I think that was a band that I had been searching for a long time that I didn't necessarily know. Because at the point, probably my
favorite
bands were
like
Dashboard Confessional, right? Mm-hmm. Which I haven't really talked about a lot in this podcast, but I'll always ride or die for
Dashboard Confessional
the time. But it's the lyrical themes and what that record did so differently. And I'm not just saying from their first album, like that's that narrative, right, where they're the pop punk emo band and then they put out this amazing record. That's out there. People know that. But it's also the ways, like, so Sick Transit Gloria, Glory Fades, right, from Rushmore. That is all about losing your virginity as a guy and having this anxiety surrounding it and thinking that you have to kind of be up for this and be this macho masculine guy, but also having like totally reasonable, rational fears about intimacy and what that will change and how it'll change you. That's something nobody was writing about.
I agree. It's funny because, like I said, I thought that album was horrible. Right. When I purchased it, the whole album playing, I'm like, this was just unlistenable. Not that who would have guessed the guy who doesn't listen to that many lyrics. But it was when Devil and God came out. That's what made me turn my eyes. And I'll talk about when Devil and God came along. But that's what turned me back around. And I'm like, let me revisit this album. Mm-hmm. And at that point, The Quiet Things and No One Ever Knows, I think is a bad song because the rest of that album is just incredible. I can't put myself in the same mind setting as that kid who thought that album sucked.
I agree with you though. I think it almost seems strategic that they have The Quiet Things That No One Ever Knows on there, because that is your favorite weapon. I don't necessarily think this is true that it was demoed there. It feels like it belongs in that.
Yeah,
era,
push it back there. Don't like Deja Entity. We're going into a new era.
But like the second that I Will Play My Game Beneath the Spin Light comes on, for me, it just kind of reminds me, it's like, man, that record is like, I would say musically, they're least interesting. I'm not even going to count Your Favorite Weapon anymore, but of those other four, least interesting musically. But again, it was just this idea of where to mine like certain ideas for themes and content of the lyrics. And then just the ways in which they actually, like...
Execute?
Execute. I was thinking of a sports term.
The way they visualize, you gotta.
Yeah, they execute it, and it's just so, I don't know. Like, that's the thing. It's hard for me to be, like, totally, like, rah-rah, back in love with it again, and we'll talk about it. But when I put myself back at that moment, I was wanting a band to talk about stuff that I thought about and was, like, worried about. Like, am I a good person? Am I treating other people well, right? And when it comes to, like, is it okay for me to feel bad about myself? And it was less about, like, you broke my heart. I did this. Like, the eye of those songs for a lot of them is the villain, right?
It is.
And that is something I have to, in a lot of ways, always owe to Brand New, is they taught me that songs can have dark hearts and that's okay.
Yeah. I've always said that, like, I'm more of an Edgar Allan Poe fan when it comes to writing towards, like, I'm cool with the darkness. Like, the dark side of life. I prefer writing more from a dark side of life rather than from an uplifting side, which I think there's room for uplifting, but just listening to the album, like, there's nothing that's really, don't listen to that album to smile. You know, like, maybe the music can bring you there, but the content in it is not going to be easy. It's uncomfortable, and it's for a reason, even back then, but previous to anything that happened later. Listening to it, it's like you said, it's just like, whoa, I didn't understand this perspective. This is talking about some real stuff. I would argue that that's the best lyrics in the entire catalog of Brand
New. I 100% agree with you. Yeah. I don't think they worry as much, and maybe it's not the right word, but lyrics are never going to be on the forefront for them again.
Yeah.
After this record. And
I mean, Vinny might disagree when it comes to Daisy, but... Vinny is their lead guitarist who got some lyrical.
Yeah.
He got to be the lyricist a lot more.
You like my face when I know that's the case.
Mm-hmm. I still like Daisy. It's just not as good as some of the others.
I love Daisy. But anywho, I think that's the thing for me, is I always have to go back to Deja Entendu. It's not a record, again, that I probably have listened to in quite some time. But
I mean, I listened to it the other day.
Oh, yeah.
You should have done some prep work for the noise.
Didn't even, just rolled out of bed, ready to go.
Yes.
But one of my least favorite modes in songwriting is self-righteousness. And I actually think that a lot of those, like, Kill Your Ex breakup songs from 2000 Zemo, that comes from a self-righteous standpoint of, I'm the victim, you hurt me.
Yeah.
How could you, like, the songwriter, the voice, right, that eye of the song is the one who is obviously in the right. And that's, like, a very powerful emotion to play off of, because we all want to think that we're in the right, that we've been in some ways wronged, and that there's no responsibility to take. But it's also, one, kind of lazy, two, unethical, and three, it, for me anyway, it makes for really bad songs. And
I'll add a four on that. Insincere to me.
Yeah.
That 100%. Or maybe not insincere, but, like, you're not being honest. It's you're dictating it.
Yeah, it's like any breakup that we've been privy to with friends, where there's like, yeah, she just dumped me, and then if you have a conversation for longer than 10 minutes about, well, what happened, you think, oh yeah,
she didn't just dump you, she had to dump you, she was protecting herself.
I think that's something I'm always going to owe that record, because it changed the way I thought about songwriting. Now, it also taught me some bad lessons that I have to, like, deal with for myself in terms of the kind of songs that I wrote, because I think in a lot of ways that kind of mode of songwriting can itself be kind of toxic, where you can write so much about how bad of a guy you are, and that becomes the mode in which you are writing songs, and that doesn't really encourage you as a person to get better. Which I think for a span of time I was like, this is where I'm going to write about how I'm not doing better by people. And at some point I was like, wow, I should just do better by people and not worry about the songs I'm writing.
That's the difficult balance. Might as well bring Tool into this again. But for as much as I complain about latter-day Tool, you know, main artist said, like, I'm sorry, I healed. You're not going to get that. Why was I making that music if it wasn't for me to heal and become a better person? And I'll always get upset with him, but I'm like, I get it. You grew off of what you were writing, to where as long as that's the approach, I would argue that that's what occurred with you. If you felt like those songs were like, what am I doing? It's like, well, I think you grew off of it. You got these emotions out. I've told people before, I'm one of the happiest go lucky guys on the planet, right, everybody? No,
you really
but
are.
I tend to be agreeable. Like I'll hang out, but I'm like, yeah, of course I have dark shit in my past and dark stuff, but I get it out through writing. That's how I get this anger and aggression and stuff that's inside that's difficult. Like, you get it out by writing about it.
Yeah.
Now, it does, after a while, it does seem like Jesse Lacey seems to talk about the same theme quite often, every album. So maybe he's not healing, but maybe he is. I don't know.
I just have to, I think, and this is the beginnings of, like, when I look back at Brand New, and there's like all of those mixed emotions of like, wow, this changed the way I thought about music. And I'm the person I am. I'm the songwriter I am. And I'm grateful for all of that. Mm-hmm. But it's also, like I've been mentioning, it's where you start to unpack like who your journey is, like as an artist, but as a person. Right. Yeah. And I think some of the songwriters that I like now, right, in terms of their work, mm-hmm. I've seen them either kind of live or die by those same things we're talking about. The crutch of, this is the mode in which we tend to write. Can you write yourself out of that? Because if you can't, in a lot of ways, I think less of you as a songwriter, because it's
arguably a person. Like, maybe the songs are good. Maybe the songs are good, but it's just like, why are you still on this? But let's just carry it on with the evolution of Brand New at this point in time.
Is it okay to move? Because I think the next record for both of us is, it's kind of huge.
Devil and God changed my life. That album was like, I remember our buddy Kenneth, because I at that point in time, I'm like, no, Brand New is goofy. It's not that good, which I was crazy wrong at that point in time. I didn't realize that Deja Vu Do was way better than, And he's just like, no, you got to check out this new album. Like, at least check out the first song, Sowing Season. And so I sit down, and it's just me and him sitting there at my computer with like those really crummy computer speakers, like probably had zero bass in it. Listen to that song. I was like, wow, that song's incredible. At the end of every single song, I went like, that song's incredible.
Mm-hmm.
Wait, okay, that song's incredible. And then the album was over. And I'm like, I said this for every single song. Every single song was incredible. They were on one.
There's a lot of things that I read about in the past 2 weeks that I didn't necessarily know about. The whole like image of Brand New, pretty much after Deja Intendu, is that they disappear for years at a time, right? 4 or 5 years, whatever. I think the span of time between Deja Intendu and Devil and God is what?
4 years?
Three years, give or take, which is actually one of the shorter ones, right? It goes three, and then long, like 8 years. But
yes, I didn't like expect science fiction, right?
Right. And they disappear, and then they come back, like seemingly out of the lab, and then they have this, whole new different way of being as a band and stuff. And I think Devil and God, when Sowing Season came out, like this band that kind of gone off the map, and then that was like, if you're someone who didn't really listen to Brand New at the time, that was like a huge deal. That record,
was a huge deal. Oh, absolutely. But the thing that always, this is where we bring him up almost every episode. Brian Lane is a really smart drummer. He's a really smart drummer, because I remember when it hit that, like, dude. Just, man, brilliant. Like, and that was the first time, because I remember his legacy up until that point for me was he does it so much throughout Deja Entidu that, like, that's the drum beat he just keeps going back to. And at first I thought, I'm like, okay, he's learning drums, but now I look back and I'm like, no, he's just playing the right thing. And then on Devil and God, all of a sudden he's creative.
I think they all got opened up a little bit.
Yeah.
It's almost like Deja Vu is so tight. Like, all those songs are like really tightly focused, and they still have like the DNA, right, of a early 2000s emo band. And I think this is Devil and God Raging Inside Me is where I started to hear comparisons of them as like the American Radiohead.
I remember you bringing that up to me back.
Didn't say that. But
no, but you brought it up to me that people were saying that, and I was like, it's not Radiohead, but they're at least in the same creative focus of trying to be a little different.
The way I think about that too is I don't think with Radiohead I would assign them with a genre necessarily outside of like rock, right? With elements of like the reason that they are who they are is that they are taking all these other elements along with them.
Sure.
And I think starting with Devil and God for me is where like Brand New started to be whatever version of themselves they needed to be for the song to be the best that it could. So like Jesus Christ is nothing like they've done before. It's this like soft, tender, like, but it's perfect. It's like it's almost a perfect song to me.
Man, if we were doing rankings, you wouldn't have liked which category I was going to put it into then. It's a good song. It's a good song. But on that album, I mean, like, get me to Gaza over Jesus Christ any day.
I think that the parts of that album where the other band we're not talking about that they're probably also pretty aptly compared to starting with this record is Modest Mouse.
Oh.
Like, this is Moon in Antarctica, like, all over it. And Jesus Christ is, like, a great example of that. Because that's, like, a Modest Mouse move. Like very simple,
yes.
Like that's Third Planet. Right? On, it's man. Almost got the same shape on the neck as Third Planet.
Every time you hear Jesse Lacey when he uses that tremolo, that little like wow, that is such a Modest Mouse move. And every time he does, I'm like, he's already talked about how much he loves Modest Mouse. So I'm like, within our circle of friends, if you pick up the guitar and you're going to use a tremolo bar, you're going to use it like Modest Mouse. It's always going to be that way.
You know? I played one show, I believe, with you on drums. Maybe it was like a trio. It was like you on bass, me and guitar, and Hollis on drums. And I had that tremble thing, which I'd never played with before. It was one of your guitars. And the first thing I thought is, I'm Isaac Brock. Let's do this. And
that's
I did it all show for no reason. And it's just, I know.
Was that in a park?
It was in a garage.
It was in a garage? Okay.
I remember that one of you at the park. That was good. So what is it on Devil and God? If you're going to point to, you said Degazer, but what are the tracks for you that make that record, like what it is, that make it so important?
Well, I mean, I kind of, every single track like blew my freaking mind.
I'm giving you two picks.
Two picks. All right. Let me take a look here really quick. It's a doozy of an album, man. Every single song I'm looking at, it's like I gotta eliminate songs before I can even just choose the first. I can take Jesus Christ off and take Welcome to Bangkok off, because I mean, come on. It's cool. It's fun still to listen works. To. Yeah, it still works really well, but there's no lyrics or whatever. But man, I'll just go off the cup. I think Archers, because again, Brian Lane, that's a really good drum song. Especially because he's basically doing the shuffle beat the entire time, even during the choruses, but that last chorus when he opens it up and finally goes to like, I'm hitting the ride, you know, we're done with doing this shuffle beat. Oh, man, that moment's incredible. And the song may speak volumes to what Jesse Lacey might have been feeling at that point in time in his life.
I have to tell you, this was funny because were we doing categories, which me even bringing it up makes it feel like we are. We're not, but
we're subtly, very subtly.
Yeah. Were we? I have to say, this last time that I listened to this record, it had lost some luster for me. And the reason was for the back half. The back half of the album, starting with Not the Sun. Like, I think Archer's Bows Are Broken is a highlight of that back half. Handcuffs to me, when I listen to it again, and I hate to say this, I just don't think Vincent Accardi is very good at writing lyrics, and I wish that he hadn't written lyrics to Handcuffs, because there's a number of lines in that song where I think, ooh, I wish.
I never really knew what the song was about.
Well, it very much reads to me as a song written by someone that doesn't usually write songs for the band. Like, it's like, what a lovely way to waste some time. That's one of those throwaway lines where you need something to finish up the line, and that, and a record where everything feels so economical.
Important. Yeah.
That song is clumsy.
Yeah, that's the thing behind it. And I still love the song. I really do. I love the string arrangement behind it. I love the piano part on it. But it does seem it's dramatic without having any real substance to it.
And I think that's the... And it's also, you could say, fits thematically with the rest of the record. But it all, I don't know. Like, there's a forwardness to it, a directness to it, that the rest of those songs don't have, that make those... Like, I haven't talked about, like, Millstone. Like, if I was going to pick, like, three songs, right, from this to take with me somewhere, one of them would... I mean, Sowing Season, of course, because that song is... so good. But Millstone is great.
Yeah, Millstone, every song to me, when you say the back half, I mean, You Won't Know was a song that surprised me when I listened to it, because right when it starts, this is such a... you brought it up in a previous episode where there's a... you can hear these riffs to where it just sounds like your buddy is just learning how to write a song. And You Won't Know has that, like, boom, gong, gam, boom, gong, gam, boom, gong, gam, boom, gong, gam. It was boring, but they convinced me of that riff. But, like, 2 minutes into the song, I'm like, that riff's amazing.
And I think that is, like, if you think of, like, the calling card of Brand New, to me, we've had other bands that are like this, too, where... I'll go on record. I don't think any one of them, drummer Brian Lane included, right? I think he makes smart decisions. I don't necessarily think he's an amazing drummer.
I disagree with that, but everybody else are going to talk. Him and the bass player, I think, are solid musicians.
They are, but we've talked about better. Like, that's fair to say, right? That's...
yes,
not...
I can't let Brian Lane take over Josh Eppert, but he's still really good to me. So,
I'll take
to
it.
Me.
Yeah. But I think... all that aside, their legacy to me is that they're able to take these really basic parts, right? That none of them are trying to really do too much. I think guitars are a great example of it. Like, neither of those two are doing things that anyone couldn't learn, like, fairly quickly.
I mean,
in terms of, like, their lead lines, and Jesse's just playing really basic chord shapes.
I disagree with that on the albums. It's really surprising me when I listen to it, because it's like, it's really just two guitars. It's a whole bunch of vocals. This is the worst thing about Brand New. You ever seen them live?
Never meet in live, no, but I have seen them live on recordings.
I've seen them live twice. They're not good. They are not good live. Yeah. And this is why I think I give so much credit to Brian and Garrett, the drummer and bass player, because those two are holding down their role. They're playing it just fine. The other two, it's embarrassing almost to watch sometimes, because I've seen live footage as well, but I've seen them live, and it's just, there's ego in there. Those two are just, like, running around like they're rock gods, and you're not playing your part.
But I mean, I don't necessarily think that has anything to do with the difficulty of it, because I think Sowing Season's a great example. That lead line, is about as simple as you can get, and I say that because I can play it. And that means something, everybody, if I can
play. So what does the other part play?
It's just those, what is it? I don't even know what you call those. Jesse? Jesse's not playing anything.
No, he's usually playing, like, he'll usually play, like, a kind of bendy note for what most people would turn it into a power chord. Mm-hmm. But he'll just play that root note. I think it is a little more difficult than maybe what you're saying to actually execute it exactly how it comes off of the album.
Let me maybe all what do you call it?
I love our hand gestures. We're both really good at this.
Today I'm really on one with my hands up. But I'll reconfigure what I'm saying. I'm not trying to say that they are, like, technically bad. I think it's more in the parts that they write. There's nothing I would say that is, like, especially difficult or complex about the parts themselves. It's more so the way they piece them together. And I think that speaks to what you're saying about the album, which is they're really smart about how they are. Like, if it's, like, a bunch of power chords, right? Or, I mean, even going back to Deja Intendu, same deal. Like, there's a lot of, like, The Boy Who Blocked His Own Shot is a very basic song to play.
Which, by the way, when everybody talks, we'll get to this a little later, but just when everybody talks about Me versus Madonna versus Elvis as being the icky song, after 2017. Boy Who Blocked His Own Shot. I'm like, why are we going past that one? Because that one's also in that icky vein.
It all makes, I know, there's so much stuff that gives us pause now. But anywho, that all sounds like me trying to drag Brand New. It's actually the opposite. Like, it was like, for me at the time, even like a very kind of freeing kind of thing to realize, which is like the bands I loved growing up, like Bright Eyes, Brand New, right? A lot of them. Yeah. It's because they were doing things that felt very attainable to me, but doing it in ways that felt very personal that I could connect with. And so me kind of falling on a lot of those songs and realizing it's stuff that it's not like some dude's been locked in his garage for 30 years practicing Dream Theater riffs.
You're
like
right. You're felt. Right.
So I think this is where, at least for me, after Devil and God Are Raging Inside of Me, like Brand New become this, like, again, they sink back into the shadows. I know they have tours. Mm-hmm. I know you've seen them. I was never interested in seeing them live necessarily. Yeah. Probably because you had told me before that they were awful. So I knew that was the case.
It's fun if you know the songs. It can still be fun. But if you don't know their songs and you were to see Brand New live, you'd be amazed that they get paid to be there.
But then they disappear again. They come back, right? 3 to 8 years, depends. And every album after this feels like the last one, and it eventually is. But Daisy was another one where we were all in very different places again, mm-hmm. and hadn't heard anything. I think they had had those two. No, this was maybe after. I was thinking of like I'm a Nightmare and Mene. I think that was after Daisy, right?
Yeah, that's after Daisy.
Okay, never mind. But I personally, listening back to Daisy again, I love Daisy.
Daisy's a cool album.
I actually think it's better than Devil and God.
That's not accurate, but that's okay. Devil and God is one of the, in my personal opinion, is one of the best albums ever written.
Mm-hmm.
And I've listened to plenty of albums, everybody. But Daisy also is a really good album. I enjoy Daisy, and Daisy is when they is where they were trying to focus on being a good live act. And at that point in time, I had seen them once. And I remember that being the statement, we're writing this more to where we can translate it on stage, as opposed to Devil and God. There's a lot of production. There's a lot of voices. There's a lot of this and that, where it's going to be really hard to recreate.
And I just think the way that there's a kind of like elemental story that I always saw with starting with Devil and God, which is a very, like, it feels very cold, right? It's an album that, like, it's funny when we're talking about Minus the Bear, and they have Planet of Ice. And I was thinking of like all these winter themed albums in my head that have those like thematic elements of like, it's kind of cold, crisp, isolated. The best version is Moon in Antarctica. Like that's perfect. That record.
I love that album too.
But you're not saying it's perfect. We'll talk about this.
Devil and God has a really special place in my heart, man.
I understand it completely, but when I listen to Daisy then, right, it's almost like you move from winter to this is like hot earth. It's like, and it's like when Thrice did those awful Element records. I know you might like some of them, but
Thrice. I'm not huge on the Alchemy Index, but I think there's some really good tracks off of it.
I always appreciate when bands do that, but it always makes me think of that, where I think Brand New was doing something similar. Obviously, probably not like purposely wanting to do it, but when I think of Daisy, there's a earthy organicness to a lot of those songs that, going back, I just think they've aged better to me. And At the Bottom is...
Like, At the Bottom's a really, really good song.
The Things That Are Pulling Apart, I Think Something Dark's Living Down in My Heart. That's a line.
That's pretty damn solid, Jesse. No, that song, I love the song Daisy, but that's a lot more of, I'm so into that hook. I love when it hits them. So if you take all these things and you bury them back. And what was the other song I told you that I...
You said Noro, which I Noro is very good.
Noro's good. That, again, is where I just think the drums are excellent. I'm not saying he's doing anything really technically proficient. It's just, you add these cool little fills, like the way he adds those little subtleties in. It's a little, not necessarily the same style of drumming, but it reminds me of Josh Everett. Like, you just do like this cool little thing that was accurate. It was the right thing to do within it.
Yeah.
And also, I remember Kenneth, I'm sure you're listening to this episode. He is not saying, "I'm on my way to hell." It's not even close.
I'm on my way out.
Right? It's not even close. This debate lasted for so long.
How listen is there a debate? It's like on the internet.
It's listen to it. Listen to it. Oh, my God. He I love what he told me, too. He sent me. He was like, "What if I told you that Noro means hell in Japanese?" I was like, "Does it?" And he was like, "No, I thought you might bite."
You had me. And I was like, oh.
Yeah, maybe he is saying, but it's like, no, he's saying I'm on my way out. Come on now.
There's a number of tracks on that record that when I listened back to it again, like you stole, which again, like when I talked about how they have this ability to take really basic parts and piece them together in a way that make them feel bigger than they are. That's a great one. It was like two notes. Down, 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 down. Three notes. Down, 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 down. That's like a bend, right?
Oh, yeah.
But even when it hit the chorus,
the first kind of listen through, I'm like, okay, but because you never hear a chorus from Jesse Lacey being that like, "Yeah, you stole." And it's like, wait, when are you going to hit the high note? The high note is coming in here, right? And just know that whole song.
I do think that this is where, for me, Brand New stopped being an influence. Like, Dejan Tendu really is the record for me. Like, it's hard to, as much as there's parts of that record that, again, like, I don't have, like, great feelings about it. But when I think of which of those are the most important to me, it always goes back to Dejan Tendu. And I, like you, like, I do love Devil and God. I have, like, evolving feelings with it all the time anyway, but I think starting with Daisy, I was kind of like always excited to hear Brand New and so like interested, but I do think that that's a record that I like admire, but there's nothing in it that I can't take anything from Vices.
I can take one thing away from Vices. Brian Lane, I'm Getting Your Back Again. One of my favorite drum fills in any song.
Really? And I have to say, I'm very confused by how, like, can I listen to it again?
Because it's so, well, I can do it for you right now. That moment where he just hits the kick a few times. Da, 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 da. Oh my God. Yeah, that, everybody, you can hear it. And I understand to maybe everybody else, I think, like, yeah, he just hits the kick a bunch of times and then hits the snare, but it was just the subdued, like, I don't know, I like that he has such a respect for the song more so than trying to be the star of the song. I don't know, I just appreciated that, you know.
I feel like I'm coming out as a Brian Lane hater. Not at all. I agree.
I'm very surprised that you don't agree with me on how good a drummer he is. I really am.
I think in all my time listening to Brand New, and like, you know me, I like to listen to drummers and think about them. And that's something that I really admire about drummers, is when they are all about the song.
Can I ask you, who's the secret sauce of Brand New?
It's Jesse Lacey.
It's Brian Lane.
That's the problem. That's not true.
That's Jesse Lacey. How is Jesse Lacey the secret? How is Jesse Lacey the secret sauce? How is that a secret?
Identity. We've had lead singers be.
You're right. No, that was my best attempt at arguing against it. Yes, Jesse Lacey is the main ingredient. That's how I'd phrase it. Jesse Lacey is the main ingredient. Brian Lane is a secret sauce. If we're going to talk about a recipe,
like, you're taking my thing. Oh, I agree with you. Okay, I get it.
That's right. I'm overrunning this now.
I'm the secret sauce. My quarter.
That's right.
So let's do this. We'll put ourselves back into, like, this comes out in what? Daisy comes out in 2009.
I just
graduated from undergrad.
Me too.
We both aren't going to go to Santa Barbara anymore.
Yeah.
And then it is 8 years. And in that 8 years, for me, I basically, like, those are actually, to me, like, the most formative years of my life, from 2009 to where I move up to Oakland Mm-hmm. I mean, I meet my soulmate, Casey. We I end up getting into grad school. I come back to Santa Barbara, blah, blah, blah. That's not, my life's boring. But
Don't worry, everybody. I'm not going to tell you what I was up to from 2009.
All I'm saying is, like, for me anyway, like, I went through spans of time where, like, I can point out why, like, when all the stuff with Brand New comes out, I've gone through a kind of evolution for myself about how I just think about other people. And it's when that record comes out in 2017, Science Fiction, like, I was a very different kind of person than the one who was listening to Deja and Tendu. But I don't know, like, that record, Science Fiction, I texted you about this. Yeah. I just think, God damn.
It's the perfect amalgamation of Daisy and Devil and God to me. It's just, I was stunned because, I mean, I think of all these different bands who have really let me down when they take this long sabbatical. You know, we're not going to be...
Don't talk bad about Fear Inoculum on this podcast.
I'm not.
How dare you.
But you brought it up. I might as well say. That was a big letdown, but that was after. After Science Fiction came out.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, but a lot of bands just... You hear they're going to release an album, and it's been a while. Okay, let's see how you guys do. And I remember listening to Lit Me Up. I'm like, I'm not going to like this album. I remember thinking that, just, I don't know. But then it does hit that, like, when I grow up, I want to be a heretic. Again, clever drumming, I think. Well, maybe not clever, accurate. Accurate, on point drumming. But,
I'm getting you back for all those times where you poke at me.
Is this devil's advocate moment right now? You're going to be the contrarian?
I'm like, oh.
All right, Maynard.
I feel it. But oh, God. Why'd you do that to me?
But yeah, just as this, the album went on, the first listen through, I was like, that was actually a lot better than I anticipated. And then Kenneth, I'll bring you back in, whatever. He told me that I think I like Science Fiction more than Devil and God. I was like, no, not possible, not the case. And at this point in time in my life, they're neck and neck. They're neck and neck. That album is that damn good.
I think that is, like, however you want to think about what the legacy of Brand New is. The reality is that they didn't make any mistake about it. This was their last record. And
that's very, like, true.
That was something that was... It's take it with a grain of salt, because so many of other bands have said something similar, and it's not their last record. But
I mean, in 2016, actually, they had, like, the RIP 2018, the release of T-shirts.
Right.
Same year, that's Brand New, 2000 to 2018. Like, they're really calling their shot here.
Yeah, it would, to the point where it would have been embarrassing for them to put another album out after that.
Exactly.
Yeah. Anywho, but that's,
they were
the
a couple
kind
months
of a,
short.
A kind of a final record where you listen to it, and in my head, I was like, I know this is the last one, but it also was, like, different enough and opened up more pieces of them that were interesting to me, where I was like, I actually am, usually when a band puts out a last record, I'm like, that was probably about it. Let's pack it up. Yeah. But this felt like there was so much more possibility in terms of where it could have gone.
To an extent. I kind of think that it was a perfect, like, the Out of Mana,
oh, I mean,
No Control. These are songs. These are songs that are, like, Zane. You know, I forgot the lyric right as I started singing it. So
I agree. Like, it's like the whole album is like a series of, hey, yo, this is it. This is the last part of it. But what I'm saying is, I guess, like, the musical part of it and the things that he does as a songwriter. So, like, Desert is a great example. I would have never expected them to put a song out like Desert. Ever.
I love that song.
And that's a song where I'm like, that's the kind of Jesse Lacey that I would have been looking for, where you stop writing about yourself and learn how to write through the lens of other people. And, like, he's done versions of that, but that really felt like a lesson in, like, that's like capital S songwriting kind of a track. It's not the best track on the album.
It's actually, it's arguably for me, well, okay, it's between two, but arguably for me, that's my favorite off of that album. I mean, that chorus is, it shouldn't work, but it just does. Because I mean, I'm like,
don't come running to me when they come gunning. Don't come running.
That's corny as shit, but it works.
Oh, it's like old, makes me think like Richard Marx or something.
Yeah. But it was something to where the first time I'm like, it's kind of goofy. Maybe not goofy, but you know, it's just, all right, you got the little callback. I think it was more silly to me because of the fact that it's Jesse Lacey doing a falsetto. Yeah, you know, but it still works really well. But 451, that's a track that surprised the hell out of me. Because that's got that like bluesy thing going. So when that first started, I'm like, what is Brand New doing playing a blues lick? And that song is great.
I agree with you. I think that's the thing is, if you listen to, like, pick your thing. Like, take either Favorite Weapon or Deja Intendu and put it next to Science Fiction. Like, it is, like, so different in the best kind of ways. Because it's, like, what you want out of a band, which is, like, evolving, but not in a way that's about, like, well, this is my... It's like John Mayer. He does this all the time. It's like, well, this is my country record. This is my 80s record.
Yeah, come listen to the John Mayer Trio. We're going to go out there and play some psychedelic blues rock.
Where it just feels like they're like picking out of a hat, and it's like, well, this is this kind of record for me now. Mm-hmm. Right? Although I do think there's some good tracks on the 80s John Mayer records. Anywho, moving on. So I just...
No. Like, let's elaborate further on that.
Last Train Home is good.
I have no idea. I will take your word for it. Maybe I'll bring it up later.
But they really does, like, the best kind of bands to me are ones where, like, the evolution they have with each new record or era that they're going through is because they're chasing down something. And it's like a dog chasing a car. And, like, when they find a version of it that they like, it comes out with a record like Science Fiction to me, where it's not uniform. Like, it doesn't feel all of one piece. It actually feels weirdly, like, mixed up because they have definitely all these... You know, yeah, they have.
I mean, they had, what was it, 8 years to work on it.
Yeah. So, and it feels like 8 years. Maybe they weren't doing the whole time, but it does feel like that.
I guarantee
long of
it
a
wasn't.
Span.
Yeah.
I think this is what else do we want to get out about why Brand New mattered to us? Because I feel like I've said my piece, like going through all these records. Is there anything else you wanted to say?
There's not much I can say. The music is something I've always identified with. Go ahead. Yeah.
Oh, I keep cutting you off today. I'm sorry, man.
Okay. You're so polite.
I'm so sorry. I do want to tell you, like, I came into this. Like, I feel like coming into this, I am the one who is far more on the side of, like, and kind of proudly for me, I don't listen to Brand New anymore.
That's all right.
And yeah. I haven't listened to these songs in quite a long time. Yeah. Here's the thing, talking to you about this and going through the records with you, like, I'm like, it's hard to not talk about some of these songs and be excited again, because they are good songs. And if you're someone who just appreciates the craft, that's something, I don't know,
it's that dangerous statement. Can you separate the artist from the art?
So that's where we are right now. And all
that's because if you want to take the lead, or I can take the lead in this transition.
I was going to say, I feel like we both have the article up probably, but I'll set us up quickly.
Yeah.
This is November 13th, 2017. This is off pitchfork.com. Mm-hmm. Noah Yu is the author. Here's the headline. Two alleged victims of Brand News, Jesse Lacey, detail years of sexual exploitation of minors.
Yeah.
That was a
difficult morning. I woke up and I got a text message from a friend of mine. Again, I'm not going to disclose any of them. Mm-hmm. But he just said, this was shortly after Louis C.K., mm-hmm. which I was a fan of Louis C.K. I don't really give a shit anymore. I was a fan, but like Jesse Lacey, Brand New, honestly, just the band in general, it is important shit for me. And it's like, mm-hmm. they helped me get through some things in my life. And I have that text message. I could hear the despair in his text message saying, Jesse Lacey just got accused of this. I'm out. I could tell that he was so heartbroken by the fact that this person who I'm not, I don't ever like to use the term idolize, but it's like, this is a guy with Jesse Lacey, it was one of those, it's like, man, I really respect this guy. This is a guy who I've been inspired by musically, you know? Mm-hmm. And yeah, just reading that.
We don't have to, because that information is out there. It's been 5 years. Yeah. So we don't have to necessarily break it down here. That's not to say everyone that's not, obviously, it's like one of the reasons why, the reason, actually, what am I saying? Mm-hmm. The reason this episode is one we've thought about so much and it's so difficult,
yeah,
is the stuff that happened. But essentially, it's, you know, grooming.
Yeah, it's child grooming. It's
sexual assault, exploitation of minors. There's a lot of stuff, right, that the diving into, like, all the people defending it, whatever. I think we're both very firm. I know, like, we're both firmly on the side of there's no real defending of. There is no defending, right, of any of that.
Yeah, no, it's what he did is wrong. It's hard to be certain as to whether or not, what's the word I'm looking for? You know, like Kevin Devine saying, like, he hopes that he can get treatment to take care of it. It's like, I like to believe that would be the case. I like to, based off of the time frame of the allegations, I still like to believe that. I mean, some of the music that you hear, some of the lyrics you hear within Devil and God, that you hear with, well, obviously for Deja Entendu and Your Favorite Weapon, mm-hmm. like, okay, this is occurring during those time frames based off of the allegations, everything that was said about him.
Right.
You know, I mean, when I listen to Devil and God and I listen to Daisy and I listen to especially Science Fiction, it seems like this stuff is actually being talked about within the lyrics.
I think you could sit down. I don't know. I'm very somewhat cagey about this for a couple mm-hmm. of reasons. One is I always respect an artist's capacity to put themselves in certain mindsets and write about things without that being in, like, something that is true from them, right? Or something that they always have to necessarily be pulling from their life. Not because mm-hmm. that can't be powerful in and of itself, because we both know it can. Yeah. But, like, and it's also just because I've spent years having to explain to people. That's not, I'm not, like, I'm writing songs right now for a record. And, like, I wrote, like, two different, like, breakup songs. And my wife has heard them and is gone, what's happening? And
yeah.
I have to kind of walk it through. But, I always respect that capacity. But when I think of, like, that day, and it's funny, we both know that day because we talked to each other, I think, later that night. Yeah. And I spoke to, it's like, you know, when the death happens and people start calling to corroborate, right, what's going on, and to check on you and, like, to talk to you about it. Like, I heard from, like, three different people that we all kind of met had something to talk about through Brand New. And I was instantly, I think because I personally was a big fan of Louis C.K. and his art was really inspirational to me in terms of what I was doing at the time. And when all that came out, and then having Jesse Lacey in this, it was kind of the last straw for me in terms of having to go back to, like, what have I been ingesting for the past 10 years, and how it could, you know, make you unpack the kind of person you are if this been, like, you're, like,
it's difficult
stuff with arsenic in it, kind of, you know.
As a cigarette smoker, I get what you're saying, but
I told you this, but I know that day is a piece of, not the full thing, but, like, at the time I was still doing somewhat regular things with, like, writing and performing. And that's a piece of why I don't really anymore.
I can understand that.
Throw my hands up a little bit.
Yeah. I'm sure that there's some element of in myself that is the same thing. We still both write. We still both try to create stuff, but I think the idea of trying to be a part of, you know, something that sells really well is, like, that completely went. It was already on its way out, but the idea of just, like, I'm not going to be a famous musician. This is just not going down.
Well, and I think to go along with that, it's like when you spend a whole lifetime looking up to people that are, I mean, in basic terms, they're inside and you're outside. Like, you and I have been outside, right? And, like, when you're in a small band, you're trying to find shows to play, you're trying to open up for people, and you're trying to, like, do that breakthrough, whatever you call it. All you can do is look at the people inside and think, I want to be in there. Like, I want to experience what they're experiencing and get to share what they're sharing. And I think as you get older, one of the lessons I've learned from like meeting people and having people who have met people, right? Yeah. Like, not to go into any specifics. Yeah. I think you really see how broken and oftentimes how like dark and awful that inside can be. And for me, it was one part that, but it was also just, I felt like up until that point, so much of what I had done as a songwriter was from the school of someone like Jesse Lacey. And it made me think, I don't want to be contributing to that anymore. I feel like I can't take myself out of that mindset of writing about like how dark and kind of like opening up all my faults and just kind of showing them proudly to people. I was talking before, right, about how that's was something I really admired, but I took the wrong lesson from it. And now I become this person who that's like my MO. It's like, oh, talking about being too drunk and too sad. And that's not a way to live a life. And I got kind of disgusted, like with all of it in the span of 5 seconds, just broke it.
Yeah. And that's not necessarily broken for me because I think I brought up the term earlier in the episode, the separating the art from the artist. Mm-hmm. The reason I can still listen to Brand New is because I don't separate the art from the artist. Those songs took on a different level. It's almost when I listened to back in the day, it was like, okay, he's imagining this scenario. Yeah. Imagining.
Yeah.
But he's imagining this scenario. Now this is horrible. And believe me, I don't like the fact that there's more truth to it per se, but it does make the song that much more haunting and that much more. I can only imagine what it's like based off of just how much stress I was feeling and like messaging you saying like, I regret having chosen this.
Right.
I can only imagine what somebody who had a negative interaction with Jesse Lacey, what they feel listening to the music. So it's gotta be god awful, but definitely when I listen back to certain songs, like I said, the Me versus Madonna versus Elvis, I'm like, this song is that much more real. Mm-hmm. You know, and I'm still torn as to whether it's a bad thing, but I'm still torn as to whether it's good art or bad art.
And I respect it because I know that's something you're always tracking down too, is like, we always come back to this like authenticity and realness. Yeah. And it's like how you how you like convey things, right? And how you posture yourself as a songwriter or band, whatever. But it's also, it's like hitting those notes of truth in your songs. And I know it's something your songs, I'm going to say this without going into specific ones. Mm-hmm. There's one in particular of yours. Can I say it?
I don't without know which one it is. Story, yeah, go ahead.
Lover and an
old
gun.
Oh, yeah. Old lover and an old gun. Yeah.
I'm not going to say anything else, but there is a, like, that song brings me to tears almost every time that I listen to it.
That's a tough one.
It's a perfect song.
We'll put that, maybe somebody can listen to it at some point. Yeah. You guys, we'll make it available to you to listen to.
But I guess what I'm saying is, I know for you, it's how you can appreciate like a song like that for, mm-hmm. and like good art, bad art, it's art. It's always going to be that, right?
Yeah.
And the way in which you see it now, it's always going to be in part because of what Jesse Lacey has done, but it's also going to be, as it always was, you, right?
Yeah.
And where you're at. So I totally respect it. I think that's why for me, I can't put myself in the headspace to listen to Brand New anymore, because I always associate them with that recognition too of me and wanting to be a better person and to grow. And for me specifically, I'm not saying this about anyone else, that is something I've kind of left behind. And I think that's true with anyone, for any artist, right, that has been shown or accused of any kind of bad behavior. Because I teach people, right? Like I teach Amiri Baraka, who is like one of my favorite poets and writers from Black Arts Movement. And, you know, he's like a known anti-Semite who has also done and said some pretty awful things. But his art to me is so visceral that I teach it. Like one of the first lines of one of his poems I teach at the beginning of my classes is, fuck poetry. And yeah.
I've heard you say that.
It's so great and powerful. And I can put myself in a space with him where I can appreciate him from an intellectual standpoint and teach him to others and let them come to their own decisions. With brand new, I just know about myself. I can't do it anymore.
And that's all right. But it is fascinating. That's a fascinating duality that you're able to be. You're able to teach an anti-Semite.
Yeah. And worse. Worse than that. But
yeah. And Tori, it's just like that's the dangerous world of art. Artists aren't. They're never going to be like this. Just like completely level-headed. Sometimes you got to run into the really difficult artist, or man, that was really good what they created. I shouldn't even just stick like you. I'm glad that you brought it to a different direction outside of music.
Yeah.
And it's just like these are dangerous avenues to go down. It's art is challenging.
Yeah.
And it's kind of the beauty behind it.
Art is like, this is where I get kind of emotional. Like, when I think of what our current kind of national like thought of as art, it feels so like superfluous. It's like, well, you know, do art on your own time, but this is the work week, do this. Like when we've had this conversation before, like art is like life. And that's not just coming from, I'm like, how can you not think that?
That is one of the most trite statements I've ever heard.
Like expression, and expression is like we are on a planet for a finite amount of time and the seconds are ticking and nothing else is going to matter except for taking stock of what your life means to you and how do you give your life meaning. And when we listened when we were younger to bands like Brand New, they helped us figure that out. And that's beautiful. Like that's something, you know.
It's tough because, I mean, what is the art for the artist or is the art for the listener, you know, or the art for the person consuming it?
Right.
Yeah. You know, it's forever going to be a difficult duality. And I just don't grin at me. Was that not?
No, smiling. I'm like looking at you talking and I think I'm thinking such awful thoughts.
I really do. I really do.
I was admiring. I was like, this is, yeah.
Yeah. But it's a difficult thing to balance, because again, you never know, tomorrow your hero may turn into a villain quick. I don't know. You sent off your brand new vinyl, right?
Yeah, I returned it, and it's funny because I remember I was emailing one of the people who worked at that label, and it wasn't like a very large label, I remember. And I was telling her, I was like, oh, I need to send this in. She's like, don't worry, I'm processing a lot of these today.
Yeah.
And I was like, I bet you are.
Yeah. I'm one of maybe three that I talked to who did keep my vinyl, and I always feel nervous about running it. I'll talk to people who don't know that there was a controversy behind Brand New, who were Brand New fans.
Yeah,
and I'm like, oh, so you still listen? And they're like, yeah, of course. Brand New is a great band. I'm like, so you don't? Did you not hear anything? I'm like, what are you talking about?
That's where you just tell them, Google it. And then
Google it. Figure it out for yourself. This is not going to be easy. This is not going to be an easy decision to make.
I think, like, coming into this, I was already kind of thinking this is where I was going to land on. I'm done with a part of my life, and I don't know if I was ever really like this, but I'm not at a stage where I like to judge people for the things they consume. Mm-hmm. I think there is something to be said about the fact that when you're listening to music, and you were just talking about this, about what is art made for, the other the flip side of that is why do you engage with art? Mm-hmm. And so, for example, if you listen to music because you want other people to see the kind of music you listen to, there's a certain sensitivity you have about the ways in which others perceive your taste in music that affects, right? And that can be affected by a lot of things, a lot of factors. One of which might be if they think it's ethical that you like that particular artist.
I've told you before that I prefer to listen to my music with headphones.
Right. And so that's the thing, is music is such a personal thing. I don't think I could ever be in the business of telling someone, hey, that person is bad. Don't. Right. Like, and again, I could point to three or four other people that I teach or read or listen to.
Yeah. It's funny that I said that I listened to it in headphones, and Pete Davidson of all people made that joke, and he had to deal with, he had to deal with Kanye, but he made that joke where he's just like, if somebody asked me like, how can you listen to that? And he's like, I don't know. Headphones, you know.
Kanye's a great example.
Holy shit, man! I'm not going to bring his name up, but I witnessed him breaking all of his Kanye albums, and that was a weird moment for me because I'm going like, what Kanye's doing is fucking stupid. Like, it is stupid. I still think there's some major mental issues behind it, but I mean, I can understand. Yeah, you saying you love Hitler. There's something fucking wrong with you. Like, if I hope there's something psychologically wrong with you.
Because I like to do this or nothing. He is talking about Kanye West, everybody. He's not addressing me, Colton Saylor.
I thought I made that clear enough.
Saying you love Hitler. I was like, I don't.
Okay, I'm sorry. I thought I made that clear enough. I was talking about Kanye. But,
you did.
But here's the crazy thing, though, is because I'm like, I liken myself to not being an anti-Semite. When he was breaking those records, the thought in my head was, I was like, a couple of those I'll take off your hands. I do still like the music of it, but it
goes back to this idea that, like, when I listen to My Beautiful Dark Twisted Fantasy, like, that is a Kanye West record for people who don't know.
Yeah.
And I would think if you're going to be like kind of ranking whatever, I would say it would be near the top, and it's an achievement. For sure, for a lot of reasons. It is not just because of Kanye, it's because it's like all of these different artists were like, oh yeah, let's just all come together to make this super fire record. And to try to go through every artist and then start to compare, what they've done that is bad. Oh, is this worse than this and this? Like, it's one, to me, not something I'm interested in doing. Like, because you're going to end up, one, like comparing atrocity to other things, whatever it is. But two, again, it's like the end goal seems to be, hey, everybody, this is what we're all listening to, and this is what we're not. Yeah. And I think that it is always going to be, and not in an ethical thing, take ethics out of it. Mm-hmm. It's always going to be like based on the person and based on the things that really make them happy about why they, again, consume art.
Yeah.
Who's going to police that? I don't want to.
That's a good point. And that's probably a good way to kind of, because we can do this forever, but I think that's the number one thing is, like, there's no policing creativity. Let's not do that. Let's not book burn.
Except for Lost Prophets. Listen to Lost Prophets.
One of my most proud moments I've ever had was when that information came out about Lost Prophets, and like a friend of mine was like, did you hear about Lost Prophets? And I was like, fuck the Lost Prophets. And he's like, oh, so you heard? And I was like, no, I didn't hear. What's the news? I always disliked the Lost Prophets. So I was just so proud of myself that I'm like, I don't even have to deal with this, like, this very difficult confrontation with whether I should like the art or the artist, you know?
And here we are again at where, if someone's listening going, what about the Lost Prophets?
Google it. Amen. All right. That's a way to cut that conversation. Okay. All right.
So that was
this
great.
Is why we should have had categories, because we've probably talked for a very long time. Categories,
I think we're right on track, because okay, we started at 2:30, and so we're not in the 2-hour range yet.
But
you don't get to the genius of us talking.
Exactly. Oh, come on, man. I use the term duality.
You did very well. Here's the deal. I think we're at a stage now where we said before we weren't going to be giving ratings and things. I hope you all got things out of that discussion. We would love, this is one of those things where I think we would both love for people to give feedback so we could like share other thoughts. Cause
come to think of it, Colton, right? What's our email?
We were all serious about this episode. We didn't even do it. It is no.your.writes.podcast@
How do you spell podcast?
.com. PODCAST is
it's tough, podcast. Right? There's something about just like, I could write, you could write it out easy, but having to say it.
Spelling out loud is a dead skill. I don't know. But please, tell us what your thoughts are, because that's like, I said this at the top and I'll say it again. I think this is the kind of conversation that it's not something where we're going to ever come to like, oh, wow, we figured it out. But it's just healthy to have these conversations.
And
have them in your homes.
And you know what, Colton, please make us all feel better for our next episode. What are we listening to?
I honestly, here's the deal. I don't know how this is going to make you feel. Because I was trying to think back. I was like, what is Rob's track record with this band? It's a band.
Okay.
And I want to say it's not like, yeah, wow. But I also want to say that we've had some common ground here. Here's the thing. Our next episode is the final episode before Halloween, which if your name is Colton Saylor, this is my favorite time of year. Like, we are recording this in September. I literally have a list of all the things I want to read, play on my Nintendo Switch, and watch, and then listen to for the Halloween season. It's a 2-month-long deal.
Here's a big difference between Colton and I. Give me Christmas over Halloween.
And that's where I go into hibernation. I do like Christmas, but Halloween is it's the peak witching hour for Colton. And so I just
never dress up. I never dress up for anything.
Oh, it's not. I mean, we'll talk about it on the day of the episode. I'll go through my Halloween ritual. But I was thinking to myself, what is the perfect pick for a Halloween themed episode?
So are you giving me hints or are you just dropping it in?
Well, okay, let me ask you this. If you were going to come up with a band for a Halloween themed episode, one band that we both have some history with, who would you choose?
Three come to mind, and I don't even think they're that accurate. Slipknot, which I'd be stunned if you chose Slipknot.
That would have been a good choice, but I didn't choose Slipknot.
The Misfits. I don't know why.
Wow, I'm just thinking, you're coming up with better choices than I am. I should have had this discussion with you way sooner.
AFI.
Oh my God.
Am I continuing? All right. Give me a hint. give me a hint. I can't wait.
I screwed up. Those are great. Why aren't you the one in charge of all of our episodes?
I'm just not that big a fan of Halloween. Just, you know.
Okay. I'm going to do it by words. Okay.
Next.
Vampires.
Damn it. I don't want this to be the second time I got gotten. I'm Parade. The only one who hasn't. Huh?
Parade.
My Chemical Romance.
My Chemical Romance.
All right.
Happy Halloween, everybody.
Happy Halloween.
They got vampires. There's zombies.
My choices were better.
See, now I'm like, what are we doing? AFI.
All right.
I only want to talk about like two AFI records anyway. So here we are.
So what are we doing? So we're doing My Chemical Romance. Yeah,
which albums? They got four albums.
They only have four? All right, cool. Yeah.
So we are going to do all
God bless
four.
You, My Chemical Romance, for hanging it up.
And that's why I thought you would like it. So here we go. We're going to listen to My Chemical Romance. We're going to have a happy Halloween time. I'm going to get Rob. My mission is Rob will be in the Halloween spirit. Wait, have we checked in with Lucky? We haven't checked in with Lucky in a long time. Hey,
Lucky!
Hey. Hiya, fellas.
It's not St. Patty's Day right now, Lucky. How do you feel about Halloween?
Lucky's been doing, you know, like crossword puzzles the whole time we've been talking. I fucking love Halloween. It's great.
It's a great time of year.
Are we both lucky?
Yes, of course. Everybody enjoy your next 2 weeks. This is Colton and Rob signing out, and Lucky, we'll see you later. Bye, guys.